My sermon for this morning was born in a classroom. I taught a class to a group of pastors, and the day came for the final exam at the end of the class. I distributed the exams, and I stayed by the desk while the students were answering the questions. And as they finished, they were going out, they left their exams on the desk, and we exchange a few words. Someone said, "Thank you, Prof, for the class." I asked him, "How did you do?" "Well, Prof, I'm sure I got an A." And someone else, "All right, one question gave me a little problem, but everything was fine." But one of them was coming, you know, with a very serious, downcast. And when I asked him, "How did you do?" he said, "Very poorly, Prof. I don't think I made it. I don't think I passed the exam." I said, "How can you say that? You haven't missed one class. I know you studied. How can you say that you did poorly?" And he said, "The problem is that you didn't ask anything of what I have studied." There was a lot of material in the class. A lot of names, theologians, some philosophers, dates, titles of books, councils, places, cities, importance. And he thought that that was very important, kind of new to him. And he memorized all that. And I asked rather, what was the essence of the class, of the course? And he did poorly, having studied much, because he paid a lot of attention to things that to me were secondary and kind of neglected that what was essential, the core of the course. And I thought that this has kind of a parallel with the Christian life, because all of us will have to take a final exam. The Bible uses the word judgment. In some places we haven't done very well with the doctrine of judgment. We say the gospel is good news until we get to judgment, and then we're kind of scared. I was studying with a lady some time ago and said, "Pastor, don't talk to me about the judgment. That scares me." But the judgment is also part of the gospel. And our life here, everyday life, is our preparation for the final exam. And my concern is, could it be that some of us are paying much attention to things that are secondary, that are not very vital or important, and neglects what is very important? Jesus said once, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint, anise, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, the most important matters of the law, justice and mercy and love." Justice and mercy and love are more important than paying tithe on vegetables and lettuce and tomatoes that we have in the garden. It's no problem paying tithe of those things, but what about the most important things, the greater things of the law? And I'm concerned because, according to what Jesus said in other place, that would be the problem with some people, with many people. He said, "Many will say to me in that day," the day of the final exam, "Lord, Lord, look what we did." And they give a list of things they've done. And one of the saddest things in the Bible is when Jesus said, "I don't know you. You didn't study in my school. What happened?" How should we prepare for the final exam? What are we going to find when we take that final exam? Suppose the Lord doesn't ask anything about the 28 fundamental beliefs. If we were very clear with all of them, if we had problem with some of them, he didn't ask us to make a diagram of the 2300 days. He doesn't ask anything about the music we listen to, if we were vegetarians or not, if we shone our shoes and took our bath before sunset on Friday. If we wore a wedding banner or not. I don't mean to say that doctrines are not important and the things are not important, because the Bible even says the church of the living God is the pillar and ground of truth. But the doctrines are not end in themselves. We are not saved by the doctrines, but we have to be careful and teach clearly what the truth is, because that reveals what the character of God is. If I had to believe what millions of people believe, because that they were taught, that those who are not saved and miss the final exam will suffer in hell for eternity, my concept of God will be different than the concept I have, that we have in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that is not biblical, that those who are not saved, we're going to be no more. And my concept of God, that God is love, is that those who not make it, God will make them to suffer as least as possible as they get lost. And I would like to suggest, I don't know how I'm going to do, I don't know if you're going to agree with me or not, but you better do, because I'm the pastor. I'd like to suggest in the final exam there will be only one question for everybody, and the same question. The question Jesus asked Peter when he wanted to reclaim him after his fall, he had denied Christ. He said, "Simon, Peter, do you love me?" And what calls my attention in this is that Jesus asked the same question three times. And nothing else. Had I been in the place of Jesus, I think I could have found quite a few other questions to ask him. I think to start, I would say, "Peter, shame on you. What, you didn't deny me?" Jesus didn't have time for that. "Peter, do you promise to never to deny me again? Promise to go to church, the synagogue every Sabbath? Promise to pay tithe faithfully?" You know why? Because love includes everything else. And where there is no love, nothing counts. Nothing is worthwhile. The Apostle Paul, he writes some things that are very difficult to understand sometimes. Even Peter found that out. And we're struggling with that on Wednesday evenings when we study the book of Romans. Some things are very difficult to understand. But in another of his epistles he wrote, and I struggle with this. Sometimes I thought he was not exactly true, but the Apostle Paul wrote it. "Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I have become a sounding brass and clanking cymbal. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have no love, I am nothing." Nothing helps. Could that be true? That a person can give all he has to the poor and even give his body to be burned? It doesn't count. And I want to explain why I think that is going to be the only question that takes care of everything else. Remember when the scribes and Pharisees went to see Jesus and tempt Jesus and asked, "Lord, which one is the great commandment, the greatest commandment of the law?" And they, I imagine, expected Jesus to say, of course, the Sabbath. Because for them, the Sabbath was the most important thing. They didn't worship on the Sabbath. They worshiped the Sabbath. They counted the steps. They wanted to kill Jesus because he healed someone on the Sabbath. And Jesus said, "You want to know which is the great commandment? Love. Love is the greatest thing. Love to God and love to your neighbor." And have you thought the last thing Jesus did with his disciples Thursday evening, a few hours before the cross, He wanted to leave something with them. And what did he tell them that evening? The last thing, the farewell to the disciples. He couldn't tell them, I live with you a great organization. Everything is planned. I give you a big bank account. You'll be all right for a while. He said, I'll give you a new commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. That's the main concern that Jesus had before he left. And even he added, in this, others will know that you are my disciples. Wouldn't that be nice that we would be known not only because we dress differently, we eat differently, we keep a different day, but because we love each other? That was Jesus' big, great, great concern. And if you want to read with me a couple of texts, in the first epistle of John chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3, do you have it? First John chapter 3, verse 3:14. We know that we have passed from death to life because we love our brethren. How do we pass from death to life? It's showing the way we love. Who does not love his brother abides in death. And in the same book, verse 17 says, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts his heart, how is the love of God in him? And then one in chapter 4, verse 17. Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Love has to be perfected in us before we take the final exam to be able to do it. Matthew 25, when Jesus talks about the last day when he's going to divide the sheep from the goats, those who are on the right, because they loved, show their love in the way they help others. Those who are on the left, because simply they didn't love. They were so full of themselves, with so much interest in themselves, they didn't have time for others, and that's the reason why they are on the left. In that beautiful book that I'm sure most of you have read, Desire of Ages, I like to read a little paragraph that Mrs. White talks about this separation of to the left and to the right that Jesus mentioned. Thus Christ, on the Mount of Olives, pictured to his disciples the scene of the great day of judgment, the day of the final exam. And listen carefully now. And he represented his decision as turning upon one point. How many? 28? One point. When the nations are gathered before him, there will be two classes, and their eternal destiny will be determined by what they have done or have neglected to do for him in the person of the poor and the suffering, the little ones. Will be on one point. And Jesus said to Peter, feed my lambs. If you love me, feed my lamb. The little ones, the least, the disadvantaged. There are so many people that are disadvantaged physically, socially, financially. Jesus said, those who are well need not a physician, but those who are sick, those who need the most, are those who should attract our attention. It doesn't matter where we are, how much we have, how much we don't have. There's always others that have more needs, have less than we have. We can be very orthodox in our doctrine, believe the truth, have the truth, defend the truth. He's not going to ask, as I understand, anything about that. There are Christians, Jesus said, that have a verbal religion. These people honor me with their lips, but their heart are far from me. In the world is the law of the forest. People abuse each other, take advantage of each other, and Jesus is among you. He should not be there. And when Jesus announced his ministry, when he came, we read in the Gospel of Luke, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, to help the brokenhearted, to free those who are in slavery. And not only he announced that as a good idea, when you study the gospel, he devoted his ministry to those that were more in need, the little ones. We heard something about that this morning in the excellent study we had in the Sabbath school. The man who, by the pool of Bethesda, 38 years sick. The young man that was born blind. Imagine that, a Jew, that man was begging on the Sabbath. Why? I don't know. Was in such a need. Probably thought the people are going to the synagogue today. Their heart might be tender. They might be able to give something. And poor man on Sabbath was begging in the corner there, waiting for something. And Jesus had compassion of him and healed him. He almost cost him his life for that. The Samaritan woman, the Greek Phoenician woman, had a sick girl. He went out of his way to find them and to help them. The woman that was sick for 12 years, we heard this morning. The foreigners, the Good Samaritan, the lepers that returned, he always tried to have in mind those that were not from the remnant people, and the children. This is the example of Christ. Sometimes we hear about the example of Christ around that some people develop a type of perfectionism, but it's not what the Bible talks about. I have a book that someone wrote and sent me to me some time ago saying, if Jesus was able to live without sin, we can do it too. We have to be perfect because Jesus can. That's not the example of Jesus, the way he lived everyday life, thinking about the little one, the least ones. I'd like to, Mrs. White, have a few things to contribute to this idea. I'd like to read a couple of quotations that she wrote. We may be very active. We may do much work. But without love, such love as dwelt in the heart of Christ, we can never be numbered in the family of heaven. I kind of don't like that quotation much. I am very active. I retired several years ago, and my son called me the other day and said, Dad, have you forgotten you have retired already? But the Lord is not going to ask me how many sermons I preached, how many Bible studies I gave, how active I was. He's going to ask me why I did it. What was my motivation for doing that? Another one, whatever the profession, no man has pure love to God unless he has unselfish love for his brother. It's hard, isn't it? But we can never come in possession of the Spirit by trying to love each other. How do we do it? We try it? How do we do? And she continues, what is needed is the love of Christ in the heart. When self is merged in the love of Christ, love springs more forth spontaneously. It's not trying to love. It's how can we receive? How can we connect in that way that we have more of his love? And I think this is the greatest challenge for the church in Norco, everywhere else, and for us individually, to show our love to Christ in the way we deal with others, to feed the lambs, the little ones, the insignificants. And probably it's a good time to take a little quiz, a little exam, privately. Just ask, no hands raising, no, nothing of that. Just how are we doing in that? Are we happy the way we function in this area? What about this past week? Are we happy the way we... Well, probably if we did it by law, we don't have anything to say because we don't keep track of what we do. Those people that were on the right, when Christ said you did this and that, they said, when did I do it? We never did that. We may never know the results of what we do, a good action, but we don't need to know. But sometimes the Lord let us see something to encourage us along the way. Let me tell you an experience I had some time ago. Some years ago, I was invited to go to conduct a week of prayer in the University of Linda Vista in the southern part of Mexico, the state of Chiapas. The president of the university at that time had been my student in Montemorelos some years before. And he said, Pastor, would it be too much if I ask you to give us a seminar on Christology while you're here? So my week was quite busy. I had my sermon in the morning, then breakfast, and then the seminar all morning for the students of theology and some of the teachers that wanted to attend, and then lunch, and then in the afternoon, we're supposed to be available for the students. They want some other people that want to talk to the pastor and pray and talk, so the afternoon was mainly taken with that. And then supper, and then the presentation in the evening. The only moment I had kind of to myself free was the last Friday morning, because the class went from Monday, the seminar went from Monday to Thursday. So I had the presentation in the morning and then breakfast, and I had free the rest of the morning. So I decided to go and visit, chat with the young people, boys and girls, that were working in the laundry. They have a big laundry and a little store. And I went and talked with them. And they were telling me their experiences, their needs, their joys, why they were there, what they were working. I remember one girl said, I'm here because my mother died some time ago. My father remarried, and she was getting along with the foster mother. So they shipped her to the school to be able to have peace at home. And we talked for quite some time, and I left. And in the evening, after I finished with the presentation, the sermon of the evening, I was talking outside with a group of students. And one girl came and gave me this little piece of paper that I still carry with me. Just a pink paper, written on both sides. I'm going to read a couple of things that she said. I'm very happy to be able to write you a note and thank you for the presentations, the themes that you gave. But above all, I want to thank you because this morning you gave me a hug when you visit the laundry. Here at the university, I'm sad and lonely. 700 students, faculty, and the innocent was sad and lonely. I wanted to go and talk with you, but I have to work all afternoon, so I wasn't able to go. Sad and lonely in the midst of so many people. And because a stranger talked to her and gave her a hug, she said, Pastor, you made me feel so important. And after I read this, I said, why didn't I hug a couple of dozen more of those people, if that hug can be so such a blessing. And then one of the theology students gave me a clip of a newspaper with a story and said, I would like you to read it. I think it has a relation with what you wanted, you told us this week. And to conclude, I want to read the story that this young man gave me. You probably heard it. Teddy Stallard was one of those little ones disinterested in school, wrinkled clothes, hair never combed. When the teacher spoke to Teddy, he always answered monosyllables. Yes, no. Unattractive, unmotivated, and distant, he was just plain hard to like. Even though his teacher said he loved all in the class the same, down inside she was not being honest. She didn't like Teddy. Whenever she marked Teddy's papers, she got a certain perverse pleasure marking X's next to the wrong answers. And when she put an F on top of the paper, she did it with a flair. Got it. She should have known better. She had the records of this boy, and he knew more than the other teachers probably knew about him. The records read something like this. First grade. Teddy shows promise with his work and attitude, but has a poor home situation. Second grade. Teddy could do better. His mother is seriously ill. That's probably why he went with wrinkled clothes and uncombed hair. Third grade. Teddy is a good boy, but too serious. He's also a slow learner. His mother died this year. Fourth grade, Teddy is very slow, well-behaved. His father shows no interest in him. And that is the boy that was going to school, the classroom of this teacher. Christmas came, and the boys and girls brought to the teacher Christmas presents. They piled them upon the desk and crowded around to watch to open them. Among the presents, there was one from Teddy. She was surprised that he had brought her a gift, but he had. Teddy's gift was wrapped in a brown paper and held together with scotch tape. When on the paper was written simply, "To my teacher from Teddy." When she opened Teddy's present, out fell a bracelet with half stones missing and a half bottle of perfume. The other boys and girls began to giggle and smirk over Teddy's gift, but the teacher had at least enough sense to silence them. Putting her bracelet on and some perfume on her wrist, she holding up her hand for the children to smell, she said, "Doesn't it smell lovely?" At the end of the day, when the school was over and the other children had left, Teddy lingered behind. He slowly came over to her desk and said softly, "I am glad you liked my presents. You smell just like my mother." When the boy left, the teacher cried for half an hour. How could she have been so indifferent to this boy that was telling so loudly that he was alone and needed love? She knelt by her desk and asked God forgiveness. The next day, when the children came to school, they were welcomed by a new teacher. The teacher had become a different person. She was no longer just a teacher. She was a person committed to loving her children and doing for them that would live on after her. She helped all the children, but especially the slow ones, and especially showed interest in Teddy. By the end of the school year, Teddy had shown dramatic improvement. He had caught up with most of the students and were even ahead of some. She didn't hear from Teddy for some time. One day she received a note that read, "Dear Mrs. Thompson, I wanted you to know that, be the first to know, and we graduated second in my class. Love, Teddy. 4 years later, another note came. Dear Miss Thompson, they just told me I will be graduating first in my class. I wanted you to know, the first to know. The university had not been easy, but I liked it. Love, Teddy. Sometime later, another note. Dear Miss Thompson, I am now Dr. Theodore Stallard. What about that? I wanted you to know, be the first to know, that I am getting married next month, the 27th to be exact. I want you to come and sit where my mother would sit if she were alive. You are the only family I have now. My father died last year. The teacher went to the wedding. She sat where Teddy's mother would have sat. She made sure to wear the bracelet and some of the perfume that Teddy had given her many years before. She deserved to sit there. She finally had done something that affected the entire life of Teddy. Peter, son of Simon, do you love me? Paul, Maria, Susanna, Santiago, do you love me? Feed my lambs. Inasmuch as you did this to one of the least ones of my brethren, you did it unto me, said Jesus. God bless us and help us to live according to the ideals that the Lord Jesus left for us.